You're listening to the cycling podcast at the Vuelta a España in association with Rafa, celebrating the sport and producing the finest cycling clothing since 2004.
Hello, my name's Richard Moore. I am with Lionel Burney.
Good evening, Richard.
Well, we're not actually together, are we, Lionel? We're remote.
We are, yeah, sadly. Yeah, where are you?
I'm on the South Bank in sweltering London, so forgive any background noises, various musicians and other people around. It's a beautiful summer's evening. Tomorrow, I head to Spain and the Vuelta to catch up with Daniel Freeb and other people there. Francois Thomazeau, a friend from the Tour de France, is there as well, and Andy Hood. So we will rope in various guests over the next couple of weeks as the race hots up. But today was another exciting stage. Perhaps not for a lot of it, but certainly in the end there was much incident, much drama, many talking points. Give us a tale of the etapa, please, Lionel.
I will do. Yes, stage 5 from Viveiro to Lugo, 171 kilometres. It was a bit of a Spanish-style siesta of a day to start with. They had a bit of rain early on in the stage, and sweltering here in the south of England, I was quite envious of a little bit of rain there. But the rain cleared up and it dried up towards the end of the day. The breakaway was a two-man breakaway today. Thiago Machado of Katusha and Julian Maurice of Direct Energy, presumably inspired by his teammate who won the stage yesterday. They got away and their lead was 6.5 minutes at its biggest advantage. The peloton reeled them in a bit, and with 75 kilometres to go, they had 3 and a bit minutes lead, and that was when Maurice was rather surprisingly dropped. Machado pushed on alone. And as they hit the small climbs, his advantage slowly rose again. And after that, it was a long, slow catch. Machado was left hanging until 15 kilometres to go when he was finally reeled in. And that set up quite a hectic finale. On the run-in, Simon Clark and of Cannondale Drapac and Philippe Gilbert, the Belgian champion, attacked with 2.4 kilometres to go. That looked pretty handy for a while, but they were caught with a kilometre left. Then the TV cameras showed us Steven Kruiswijk of Lotto NL Jumbo lying on the floor. He crashed on the side of the road and had a suspected broken collarbone, certainly out of the race anyway. There was a second crash in the final kilometre, which also caused havoc. The sprint really was it was pretty much a formality for Gianni Meersman of Etix Quickstep. The Etix Quickstep team had it all sewn up, and he won the stage, his second stage of the race, ahead of Fabio Fellini and Kevin Reiser. Darwin Atapuma lost time, but the 3 kilometre rule was applied, meaning that he keeps the red jersey by 29 seconds from Alejandro Valverde. So chaos at the end today.
Yeah, it was chaotic, and it was an exciting uphill finish. I mean, a lot of people highlighting the exposed pole, which seems to have caused a crash. Certainly Bram Tankink and George Bennett, teammates of Steven Kruiswijk, have said on social media they think that that's what caused the crash. It was a very similar type of pole that caused a terrible crash. Peter Stettina through the Basque Country last year. Yeah, these things should be covered up, shouldn't they, really? And especially in the final couple of kilometres of the stage when things are frantic, the bunch is weaving all over the road. And if that is what has caused Kruiswijk's crash, then he has a very justifiable gripe against the organisation.
You say covered up, Rich, but I think that a pole like that should be removed regardless of whether or not it was the one that caused the crash that has put Steven Kruiswijk out of the race. Bram Tankink posted a picture, a screen grab from the television on his Twitter feed. If anyone wants to look that up, it's Bram Tankink, BramTankink, on Twitter. And he's circled in red where the post is, and it's a good few feet out from the edge of the pavement. In the road, and really when organising a grand tour and thinking how close to the finish that is, that's the sort of thing that the race organisers and local authorities should be removing, not just,
yeah,
I mean, it's completely
ideally
exposed.
Yeah, although I think one of the problems is that it's just not very visible, is it? It's small and it's a dark object against, you know, in the shadows, and the chances are riders didn't see it, and if it's just a bit more visible, if it has some kind of cushioning around it, then it would be okay. It would be a very visible obstacle to avoid. But yeah, it's a big shame for Kruiswijk, who obviously was targeting a decent ride here at the Vuelta, and he's lost a bit of time, but he looked okay, and he probably would have come good in the mountains. So huge shame that he's out of the race, and his team have said he's off to the hospital for scans. The second crash we don't know quite so much about, do we? The TV cameras didn't really catch it properly. There has been some footage that shows Chris Froome just avoiding it. He was very lucky not to be caught up in it, but several riders were at least held up, and it made for a very reduced group coming into the finish. At first I thought Froome thought there'd been a split, and Froome was bridging across the great divide, but that wasn't the case. It was a crash that had caused the split.
Yeah, and it's been a while, it's taken a long while for the organisers to sort out the results and make sure that everybody gets the correct time. But the most important thing at the very top end of the GC is that Darwin Atapuma keeps the red jersey for another day. It was another impressive finish by Etics Quickstep, wasn't it? Not that they've got the greatest amount of opposition, even if everybody stays upright. But when you've got Zdenek Stibar doing the lead out and Jani Meersman finishing it off, that's quite a formidable tandem to try and get around. And Meersman's having a great race. It's clearly his biggest set of results of his career so far, a couple of Grand Tour stage wins.
Yeah, they had a great Giro, didn't they, Etics Quickstep? A poor Classics campaign, a great Giro, a poor Tour for them, and it looks like they're having a decent Vuelta.
Indeed, and Meersman doesn't really get that many opportunities to ride for himself and pick up wins in Grand Tours. I mean, he didn't ride a Grand Tour at all last year. He did. He started the Giro, but only lasted 4 days. The year before that, he didn't ride a Grand Tour. So this is a sort of rare opportunity for him. And he's a good rider. He's been a professional for coming up for 10 years now. He turned pro very young. I think he was only 20 or 21 when he turned pro for Discovery Channel, and he's sort of been around the block a bit. He's at Francais du Jour for a while, Lotto Belisol for a while, and he's been with Etics, or Omega Pharma as they were originally, for I think this is his fourth or fifth year. And cycling clearly in his genes, because his grandfather was a pro, Maurice Meersman. I don't know if you know this, Rich. He rode the Tour de France in 1948. Probably the best result of his career. Second in Het Volk in 1950.
Didn't know that.
And his dad was a pro as well. Raced mostly for sort of small Belgian squads. He did a couple of years at Splendor, which was one of Sean Kelly's old teams, although they didn't overlap. And so, yeah, clearly it's in the genes. And a couple of Vuelta stage wins for him in the opening 5 days. Whether he'll get another opportunity, could be a bit of a gap now before he gets another opportunity, though.
Well, did I read today that he may be off, or is off, to Fortuneo Vital Concept next year?
Well, that's a bit of a move to the championship, isn't it?
Well, I may have imagined it. I'm pretty sure I read that today. There's huge uncertainty, of course, around Etics Quickstep. I think we talked about this on the podcast last week, about whether that team will even exist beyond next year. They're signing up riders only until the end of 2017, and you know, that's been a factor in Tony Martin leaving, perhaps, and in a general air of uncertainty around that team, which, despite that, you know, they're performing extremely well. Listen, we've got Daniel Freibaut in Spain. Shall we hear from him? I wonder if tonight's dispatch will be as left field as last night's. Over to you, Daniel.
Good evening, chaps. The day when we're all going to be reunited, or at least two of us are going to be reunited in Spain at the Vuelta, is inching ever closer. You can hear the excitement in my voice, I'm sure. Where am I tonight? Good question. Monforte, I think it's called. Excuse the Italian accent. I tend to pronounce everything Spanish with an Italian accent. Anyway, still in Galicia. Very much enjoyed our time in Galicia. Absolutely loved the landscapes. Have absolutely hated the architecture. Quite extraordinary, some of it. The towns are, well, they often look as though they belong in particularly impoverished parts of the Eastern Bloc. I know that sounds quite disrespectful to Galicia, and the people here have been fantastic, but the architecture really is a marvel of bad taste. anyway, or just or simply functionality over aesthetics, I suppose, if I'm being kind. Anyway, going back to today's race, not too eventful until the last 2.2 kilometers, really, when Stephen Kruijswijk, who's one of the favorites for this race on GC, crashed, or we think he crashed, into a bollard, a pole, very similar to the one that Peter Stettiner crashed into last year at the Tour of the Basque Country. Peter Stettiner sustained terrible injuries. His career looks as though it might be over at one point. He's made a pretty heroic comeback. He rode the Tour de France recently. But the UCI assured us after that incident in the Tour of the Basque Country that these kind of bollards, these kind of poles, would have to be taken out in races in future, and that safety was their number one priority. There's been a lot of talk about that in the last few months, and yet we still get a situation like the one today, and it's quite extraordinary, really, when you consider not only, you know, the amount of planning that goes into a race like the Vuelta from the organisers' point of view, and, you know, let's not forget ASO, the Tour de France organisers, are, well, heavily involved. They pretty much run the Vuelta these days in association with Unipublic, the former sole owners of the Vuelta, sole proprietors of the Vuelta, but, you know, the UCI as well, but then also even the teams themselves. It's very much de rigueur these days to wreck a race routes, and certainly the last 2-3 kilometers of race routes on the day of the race, the teams generally send someone up the road to scout for them and to take pictures and to send them back, and you know, journalists as well, a lot of us drove the course today, and to think that no one noticed this pole, which was not quite in the middle of the road but very much on the course, the trajectory that the riders were going to take, is quite amazing, really. And I think if anyone should feel aggrieved tonight and quite bitter and quite angry, it's not just Stephen Kruijswijk, but Peter Stettiner, because, you know, that accident I mentioned last year in the Tour of the Basque Country, that should have been a cautionary tale, really, for the whole of professional cycling, and action should have been taken quickly. And I know that action is being taken by organisations like the CPA, the Riders' Organisation, people like the former racer Christian Vandevelde, very instrumental, very very active in that, and I know they're doing a lot of hard work to try and improve things on the safety front, but it really does require urgent action when accidents like today's occur. Anyway, that's about all from me. Pretty sour dispatch tonight. I'm sorry, there's nothing more positive to talk about. Anyway, I'm sure there will be over the coming days when Richard, I've now ascertained that it's Richard, not Lionel, who's going to be joining me when he finally arrives in Spain. So that's all from me. Have a good evening, chaps, and catch up with you tomorrow.
Eurosport, the home of cycling.
Thank you very much to Eurosport for continuing to sponsor the cycling podcast. I'll be going out to Spain tomorrow armed with a few Pedler de Charme t-shirts in Vuelta colours, Lionel. We've got some reds, wow, and yellows in there. So that new range will be on the website, thecyclingpodcast.com. And I'll take a bundle of them and present them to riders who are deemed worthy of Pedler de Charme. So keep your peepers peeled, people, for riders whose efforts deserve a nomination for Pedler de Charme. We're going to run a poll, aren't we, some days, to decide on who should win Pedler de Charme?
I think we are, yeah. We should get that underway. I think when you get out there so that you can arbitrate, you'll be keeping a very close eye on the charming pedalling that's going on.
I will. Another thank you also to Rafa, of course, for sponsoring the cycling podcast. And tomorrow morning, that's Thursday morning, first thing, I believe, we will be releasing another little bonus episode, which is a conversation with Sir Bradley Wiggins. That was held in the Rafa Cycle Club last Thursday, just after he'd returned from Rio with his 5th Olympic gold medal, 8th Olympic medal in total. And it was a 25-minute chat in front of an audience, and, he's in good form. He was very relaxed and speaking a little bit about Rio and the team pursuit, and also looking ahead to the future and what the future holds for him and his team Wiggins, which I think is going to be a big part of his future. So, yeah, that's all coming up tomorrow morning, a little bonus. And just on today's stage, Lionel, I mean, you mentioned in your Tale of the Etapa, Gilbert and Simon Clark. I mean, Simon Clark launched a real do-or-die effort. Now, Cannondale have a strong team at the Vuelta. They're clearly, you know, up for doing something. Pierre Roland tried to get across to the winning move the day before. Had he done so, he might have won a stage. There, Simon Clark had a go. They really need, it's not so much that they want to do something, they need to do something at the Vuelta, don't they?
They do, yeah. I mean, when you think back to the Giro, they really were hoping to do something big there with Rigoberto Urán going for the overall, and that didn't come off. I mean, if you look at the list of teams that have won World Tour races this season, I mean, it's been a shocker for Cannondale. I think they've only had one World Tour win, is that right? Or have they had a World Tour podium? But they've really not had the best year at all. And we remember bumping into Jonathan Vaughters on the Champs-Élysées at the end of the Tour de France, a really torrid Tour de France for the whole team. Pierre Rolland, their big hope, everything was pinned on him, and he crashed out. Not crashed out, but he crashed out of contention.
Crashed a couple of times, didn't he? Hit a wall, yeah, on the first day in the Pyrenees, and then, or certainly on the stage into Luchon, hit a wall with his hand, didn't go and get the hand x-rayed because he didn't want to find out that it was broken. And then he had another terrible crash, didn't he, when he got himself into a stage-winning opportunity.
Yeah, and they've had a... I mean, I said they've had a... have they had a World Tour win? They haven't had a World Tour race win. Their best result in the World Tour is Alberto Bettiol's third place in the Tour of Poland, which pretty much went unnoticed because the Tour of Poland was going on while the Tour de France was on. So it's been a torrid year, and they need something to boost morale, I suspect, at the Vuelta. And they've got riders in that lineup that could do so.
Oh, yeah.
Looking at...
That's the A-team, isn't it? Talansky's there, Dombrowski, Simon Clark, Pierre Rolland is there.
And so you looked at the win for Calmejan of Direct Energy yesterday, and you know, that was a fantastic victory for them. They're not in the World Tour, but they get to ride quite a lot of the World Tour races. You know, that sort of opportunity wouldn't come along at the Tour de France, and so, you know, it's probably quite a smart move by Cannondale to pick such a strong team for the Vuelta, and hopefully if they can just avoid bad luck, they'll come good, yeah, later on in the race.
The pressure's on, though, and you know, that was a really good effort by Simon Clark today, and when Philippe Gilbert got across to him, you thought, well, that might stay clear. You would have fancied Gilbert perhaps in the sprint, but still a really good effort by him. Do you remember when we bumped into Jonathan Vaughters in Paris? He said that there was one signing that he was really excited about. He was somebody who he felt would be a leader, not so much perhaps on the bike, but off the bike, a big personality. I think that's Taylor Finney.
Oh, interesting.
But I could be wrong. Interesting. I could be wrong. They've signed Seth Van Mark, of course. That's being confirmed from Lotto NL Jumbo. He'll be a big hope for them for the classics, Flanders and Roubaix. And expect great things from him. But Taylor Finney would be a very strong backup for Seth Van Mark, and somebody who can and should win races in his own right.
Yeah, assuming he can get back to that level after the terrible crash. It's been a long, quite slow return to the top for him, hasn't it?
Yeah, sorry about that noise in the background. There's a young child just crushing a plastic thing in front of me, taking great delight as I screw my face at him. Anyway, it's probably a sign that we should finish things off there, Lionel. And I'm heading out to Spain tomorrow, so I will be speaking to you tomorrow from Spain. Or will I be speaking to you? I think I will be speaking to you and then picking up with Daniel from Friday onwards.
I think so, yeah. I'll see you through tomorrow, and then I'm taking a kind of a back seat for a week. Probably do the tail of the etapa.
Well, I hope so. Then, who else is going to do it?
Yeah. Rob Hatch. Get Rob Hatch,
yeah,
to do it.
Oh, yeah.
just a very last one, just on riders and their names from the top five today. Zico Wuitens, the Belgian rider with Giant Alpecin. Am I imagining this, or has Daniel told us before that he is named after the great Brazilian footballer Zico?
I think he is, and I was wondering if Gianni Meersman is named. It's an Italian name, isn't it? I wonder.
Well,
but he's Belgian. Is he named after Gianni Motta or something?
I did wonder that. I was doing a bit of research, and I found on a Belgian site that wondering whether he, because his dad was a pro racer, whether his dad had named him after an old teammate or a great Italian rider that he admired. But no, apparently he's named after an Italian restaurant called Gianni's that his dad and mum used to visit.
Brilliant. Well, it could be Pizza Express.
His younger brother's called Luigi, who's also an amateur rider, or was an amateur rider in Belgium, didn't make it as a pro. I wonder whether the waiter was called Luigi.
I'm
not sure. Speculation, that.
That is speculation. I'll tell you what, I'll try and find out when I'm out there. Anyway, let's leave it for there, Lionel. Thank you very much again, and I'll speak to you tomorrow.
Thanks very much. Yeah, have a safe trip to Spain, and enjoy the sangria when you land.